Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started? Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jay Schmelzer. I'm one of the directors of program management on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. As a program management team, for those of you that haven't decoded what all of our titles mean, my team is responsible for designing a set of the experiences and capabilities inside of Visual Studio. Specifically, my team spends our time thinking a lot about what you need to be able to do to build applications that can be deployed on top of or take advantage of Office and SharePoint. My team is also responsible for the experiences in Visual Studio for building applications that you deploy to Windows Azure, taking advantage of SQL Azure as well. And then also we are responsible for the newest member of the Visual Studio family, called Visual Studio Lightswitch. Now, this afternoon, what we're going to do is talk a little bit about kind of the experience and what we're trying to accomplish around Visual Studio, specifically as it relates to building solutions for SharePoint. Now, just to help me kind of gauge everyone's experience in the room and maybe tailor this presentation a little bit based on that, maybe a quick show of hands. How many folks in the room have built or are currently building SharePoint solutions using Visual Studio 2010? Okay? And how many folks have not yet built an application but have a feeling you will be doing so in the near future? Okay, great. And then one last question, just sort of the other breakdown. How many folks in the room consider yourselves to be developers by trade? All right? And then how about more in the kind of IT professional okay. So kind of a little bit of a mix of experiences, a little bit of mix of kind of what you're looking to get out of this, I take it. So that's great. Well, what I thought we would do, the session is titled Developing and Managing SharePoint Solutions with Visual Studio. It turns out that this week I've also got another session on Thursday that is truly going a lot deeper into kind of the management as it relates to application lifecycle and using those aspects of Visual Studio. So I'm not going to go into that much at all today. We'll save that for a detailed session on Thursday afternoon. And we'll spend most of our time talking about the development side of it and then get into management more as it relates to how to maybe manage your development environment, manage your solution structure, and some of those kinds of things as far as setting it up. Talk a little bit about the administration and the management as it relates to features and packages within SharePoint, right? The way of distributing those solutions. So hopefully that's okay with everyone. We have a nice sized group here, so I'm happy to, if you have questions over the course of the session, feel free to throw up your hand or yell out if I'm not seeing you or if the one light here keeps blinding me and I can't see. I'm happy to try to take questions throughout the session. And if it gets out of hand, then I'll ask you to stop and we can talk about it more later. Given that we are the session right after lunch, I thought what we would do is not do too much in the way of PowerPoint slides and actually do most of this through actual demos and using the product. Hopefully that's okay with everybody. I see a lot of smiles. Yeah, you guys always like that a lot more than me having to do all those demos, but that's okay. It'll be fun for all of us. And I'm sure you'll be forgiving if something goes a little off. So with that, why don't we go ahead and switch over to my demo machine here. Since I always get asked this question, I thought one of the things I would do right up front is just give you a little sense of kind of what I'm actually running up here. This is actually a relatively older laptop. It's probably about 3 or 4 years old, so it's not state-of-the-art by any stretch. I think the most important thing to notice is that I am running Windows 7, so I will be running and doing all this development using a client version of the operating system. One of the things that we did enable with SharePoint 2010 was the ability for developers to install SharePoint on a client version of the operating system for development purposes. You don't have to run Windows Server as your development environment anymore when you're doing SharePoint solutions. With Visual Studio 2010 and with Visual Studio 2012, we do still have the requirement that when building SharePoint solutions, you need to have SharePoint and Visual Studio physically located on the same machine. There are a number of reasons for this, not the least of which is just ensuring that we give you a very predictable and consistent environment to work in. The way the Visual Studio debugging environment works, being a blocking debugger, and the way SharePoint allocates sites, those two things don't get along very well sometimes. So we ran into a situation where people working on what they thought were completely unrelated SharePoint sites on the same machine would actually find that they would be stopping each other and blocking each other when one person's sitting at a breakpoint and the other person's trying to do something, they appear hung. So that's one of the reasons why we had to put the requirement in that you have them all installed locally. It does need to be a 64-bit version of the operating system. SharePoint is a 64-bit product, so that is a requirement. You'll notice here that I'm running 8 gig of RAM, 8 gig of memory on my machine. We've found that actually, 6 gig, perfectly acceptable. Actually, most of the rest of my machine, my team actually does all their demos on 6 gig machines. 4 is an absolute minimum. If you have less than that, you're not going to probably have the most fun while you're doing your development. But if you need coffee breaks, then I guess that's one way to do it. So anyway, 6 gig or up is usually what I recommend for folks to try to use. So that's a little bit about kind of my configuration. I am using the release candidate of Visual Studio 2012 today, so I will be pointing out quite a bit of the work we have done in Visual Studio 2012 to continue enhancing that developer experience you have for targeting SharePoint 2010. So to get started, why don't we go ahead and create a new project? And right here, you'll notice that one of the first things that we did was we went through and looked at all of our telemetry data that comes back about how people are using the product. And you'll see that the list of SharePoint projects is smaller than it was in Visual Studio 2010. The reason for this was it turns out these are the only ones you actually used. that's not completely true, but for the most part, these are the ones that folks use. And actually, that top one that used to be called Empty Project was by far and away the most popular one that developers were using. So rather than put all the rest of the noise in front of you, we decided to trim this down and focus on exactly what you were actually using in the product. We haven't removed any capabilities from the product, just so everyone's clear. If you're using one of those other projects, you'll see how those experiences still carry forward and work. When we were initially designing the project entry points, we were really thinking about and trying to design it around what are the types of SharePoint solutions people are thinking about when they're starting their project, or maybe complete for the project. So that's why you see things like the web part showing up. That was certainly one of the most common things that people were thinking about when they started their first SharePoint project was, oh, I need to create a web part. We had a number of other ones that were in there that turns out you just didn't use or weren't as common, so that's why they've been removed. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the empty project. We'll give this a name. Let's just call it TechEd, or about TechEd demo will work. And what Visual Studio is now going to do is it's going to ask me for the location of the SharePoint site that I want to do my development against. So it'll be on my local machine, and then we just go in here and specify which site or whatever we want to work with. You notice that I'm working off of a site collection that's not the root or not the default site collection. That's certainly something I encourage folks to do, is to just create a site collection off of the main root, do your development there. That way, if anything ever goes wrong, you start having problems with that, you can delete that site collection, start over again. If you do it at your root and you have a problem, that is a little more painful than just deleting and recreating one. So that's why I do that myself as well. Of course, we still have the sandbox and farm solution support. For those that aren't familiar with that, sandbox solution was a capability introduced in SharePoint 2010 that allows us to deploy code to a isolated environment. This can be isolated on a physical set of hardware. It can be isolated just within a process inside of a shared server environment, like I would be running here locally on my laptop. And what it does is it gives us an execution environment that is constrained in terms of the scope of the SharePoint object model I can interact with. It's also can be constrained and controlled in terms of the amount of resources that code can take advantage of or can utilize. So you can throttle the code here in this environment. And if something is misbehaving, SharePoint has facilities in there where you can just kill it off and stop it, so you can't have runaway things that take down the rest of or affect the performance of the rest of your environment or your farm. The other big thing for developers is that you can deploy into a sandbox without having administrative access to the server. You don't have to be a server admin to deploy into the sandbox, which is a nice thing. You don't have to go run around to your SharePoint admin to actually get things installed on that machine. And of course, if you're taking advantage of Office 365 or SharePoint Online, then sandbox, you know, in the shared instances is the only way you can get any code to deploy into that environment. So I'm going to go ahead and we'll use sandbox for this and say finish. So now what we're going to have is just an empty project, an empty SharePoint project that I can start adding things to. I mentioned that while we trimmed down the set of new project templates we had in the product, we didn't actually remove any functionality in terms of what you could do with Visual Studio. As a matter of fact, we actually added functionality to the product. So when I right-click and say add new item, now we see the full list of all of the things, all the types of things that you might want to add to your project that Visual Studio understands. Some of these used to be project templates. Now they're all item templates. A couple things you'll notice. Jason showed this morning in the keynote, if you were there. One of the things that we found very common for folks was the ability, you know, the need to create a list. So we can go in here and we can, you know, create a list. We'll call it, you know, contacts, or let's put my in front of that, my contacts. Say add. And what we're doing with this list experience is we're allowing you to go in and you can create a blank list, or you can create a list based on any list that you already have deployed into your site, into your development site that you pointed us at. So in this case, maybe I want to create a contact list based off of contacts. We'll say finish. This is now going to bring us into the visual design surface we have for creating lists inside of Visual Studio 2012. You see that we're pulling back the schema of that list definition. We can go in here, we can, you know, add and add new fields to that list. So maybe one of the things my contacts have are pets. We can define what data type this is, so all the way down to and including things like choice lists. So if we want to constrain the values, we can define a choice list using our property grid over here on the right. We can go in and have a familiar experience for actually defining what the valid values are for that choice list. So maybe, you know, pets, we have things like dog or cat or, I don't know, fish or you name it, any other kind of, I don't know, maybe someone has a horse as a pet, I don't know. Right? And you can go and define those things here right within the visual design experience. Those of you that are familiar with SharePoint development and familiar with the concept of content types, we tried to stay true to our design principles with Visual Studio as it relates to SharePoint, and that trying to make it simple and easy for you to get in and get started, putting you down a path of success, following some best practices, but also giving you the power that you might want if you're sort of more familiar with that SharePoint experience. So if you want to go in and control content types directly, right, just clicking this button allows you access to the various content types that were part of this list. You can use those to manipulate the way the actual list definition is being described and so forth by working with that. We can also go and work with the various views that are available for viewing the list. So by default, we have the all list or the all view in here. We can choose what columns should or shouldn't be displayed in there. You know, maybe attachments or something I don't want. So we could just remove that, and now my all view won't show the attachment field anymore. It'll just show these other fields. I could add new fields in here if I wanted as well. We can define multiple views that are all going to be part of that just default generation of UI that SharePoint does for us. And of course, we can define some basic properties for that list. What name is it? Give it the descriptions, whether or not we want it to be visible in the quick launch bar, and so forth. So if I was to go and just sort of kind of control F5 this right now to do a quick deployment, what you'll see is, sorry about that. We've got, you know, my contacts list showing up over here. If I go add a new contact, you see all the various fields that we'd expect. You know, my pets column down here is populated with my choice list, and so forth. Okay, so that's just kind of a quickie list example. Let's go ahead and delete that one and do something a little bit more interesting. So we'll go in, let's create a new list again. Create a list. Let's call it my tasks. And this one we'll just do as a blank list, and we'll build it up from scratch. So again, you know, all lists by default have a title, so you know, we keep those things in there for you, trying to just ease your experience, not make you do everything that's usually pretty common. And now as I'm defining lists, what you see is that we're bringing back a list of all of the fields that are defined on your site that you're developing against. That's where this list comes from. So if I wanted to do my own little task list, you know, one thing I might want to do is due date. You see as I'm typing, we're getting that filtering down of the list based on those values, and we're just doing a search through the values, so we don't have to necessarily do it at the beginning. So we could pick the due date field that is part of the default task list and reuse that field as part of our list definition. We could even go in here and say, let's do something called status. And again, we could choose the task status field that is predefined for us. Again, if I go look at that choice list, you'll see that what Visual Studio is going to do is pull back all of the various choices that are part of that field as well. So we see those in here by default, and we can make modifications if we needed to. So now we've got our simple list here that we'll use to kind of work again with for the rest of the demo. Again, if I wanted to customize the view, I could take off, you know, the attachments, for example. Maybe I don't have those as part of my list. So now I've got my task list. The next most common thing that people were doing was creating web parts, visualizations for things they were doing within SharePoint. So let's go in, we'll right click, we'll add a new item. And you'll see that one of the things that we've included in the product this time is the ability to create visual web parts. So in other words, using the web forms designer, the visual designer that's part of Visual Studio, when deploying to the sandbox as well. In Visual Studio 2010, that wasn't possible out of the box. You had to go get an add-on component to do it. We've rectified that problem. So now we have the richness of all that right there. So let's go ahead and kind of give this a name. We'll call this Task Adder and say OK. And that's going to go create the beginning of our simple web part here. So I mentioned we have the ability to use the visual designer. So if I click over to the design tab, we see I have my visual design surface as part of Visual Studio. You know, I can go in here and start building up my UI this way. You know, I might want to go over here and, you know, we would pop open our toolbox, grab a text box from here, drag it out. And I get all of the familiar Visual Studio web design experiences here. So I can go in. We can set the user property grid, set the ID, and we'll call this, you know, the title. We can continue through here and design this way, but if you're not someone that uses a visual designer to actually lay out your forms, which is fairly common, a lot of web developers are more markup people, well, we can go into the markup view and do the same thing. We can, just like we can any other web development inside of Visual Studio, we get all those same experiences when working with and building against SharePoint. So I can go in here and, you know, let's say I want to go, let's go back over here real quick. Let's say, you know, due date. And then we'll come back to our source view here. Let's get that out of there. Let's drag a calendar in. So just like with any other web forms application, I can go, you know, do drag and drop from the toolbox into my markup, right, to generate controls. Now we can go in here and just kind of give these things names and so forth. Maybe you're not even a drag and drop person. You're just a markup person, right? Fine, no problem. We can go in and do that as well. We can take advantage of all of the completion list experiences that we have in the web form designer. So if I want to create a button here, we can take advantage of that new snippet integration that they did with the web form designer and helped me complete my markup authoring even faster. So now I could say, you know, the text for this is, you know, add task, kind of run at server. We'll give it an ID equal to, call that add task. And then, you know, we want to wire up a click event. So we'll say on click, and we'll just have it create a new click event for me in the code behind of this form or this web part. Do one last thing here. Let's create just a simple label control. We won't give it any text, and we'll give it ID equals status label. Okay, so we've got some basic markup. Even if you're not a visual design person, you can at least use the visual designer now as a sort of WYSIWYG preview of what your markup is going to look like, what the work is that you did might look like there. Okay, going back to the source view, let's just go hit view code. We'll get this out of the way, give us a little more real estate. And now we can just go implement the code that we need to actually add a task to our task list from that UI. In this case, you'll notice that we've already got a reference to Microsoft.SharePoint, one of the most common assemblies you need to do if you're using and doing custom development against SharePoint. We do have a little bug right now in the release candidate where we're not actually including the using for that. So I'm going to go ahead and type that in. Out of curiosity, I called it a bug. Do you guys agree that that's a bug? Yeah, okay. I thought so. Okay, so now we've got the namespace included. We can just go write some code here. So what I'll do is I'll create a list item, SP list item, call it new task, and we're going to go grab that from our SP context. We're going to get the current web context. We're going to get a hold of the my tasks list. And we'll say items.add. Okay, so that should hand us back a new task item. And now we'll just go set the properties of that task item based on the UI values that we had in our controls. So we'll just simply come in here and say, new task, title equals title.text, and new task. And now I always forget, because we've used those existing fields, we need to actually go get the right name. We didn't actually specify the name for this. So again, fortunately, I can go back to List Designer. I can use the properties over here and see that, okay, the name that of that field we used is actually task due date. So let's go put that in here. We'll call it task due date. We'll have that equal to, okay, call my calendar control due date. That's select date. And then we'll just do a little two string, taking it to the shorter version of the date. And finally, new task, task status. And this one we'll just kind of hard code to say that, okay, task isn't started. We've got our properties set. So next thing we need to do, let me scroll this up for those of you in the back. Is that a little better? So we'll say new task dot update. So that's going to go and actually update that and save that back to our list. And then we'll just go in here and say, just give ourselves a little message, status label dot text. Oops. Task. Added. And then we'll clear the text from the title. Okay, so assuming I've done this correctly, I can hit F5 now. And what Visual Studio is going to do is it's going to go and actually package up this solution into a WSP. It's going to take it over to my server, which is on the same machine. It's going to deploy it. It's going to activate it. And it's going to launch me into that site. And you see I have a list over here, my tasks, that's empty. We also have that web part, so let's go ahead and just create a new site page for ourselves to work with. We'll call it my tasks. This throws it into the page editing tool. We're going to go ahead and using the ribbon, we're going to go insert a web part. The web parts you create with Visual Studio are automatically put under this custom folder inside of your list of web parts, so we'll go ahead and take that. We see we have our task adder web part here. We'll add that to the page. So now we've got that in there. Let's create a little space. just to make this easy for us to look at, let's go ahead and grab our list as well. So we'll take the My Task list, add that at the bottom here. All right, that looks good. Save and close out of here. We're now in our task list, so we can say, you know, maybe we have a task to, you know, prep for the demo. We'll say we needed to do that yesterday. Add task. Assuming I got all those names right, you see we've added our task to the list, right? Simple, basic kind of flow here, but pretty common set of experiences. So that gave us a look at how we've tried to bring the web development experience that you might be used to with ASP.NET into the SharePoint experience as well. So this is all using, you know, just ASP.NET forms-based kind of code, typical code behind and those kind of things. Now, it's still early in the week here at TechEd, but I have a feeling that by the end of the week, one of the things that you're going to be hearing a lot about or feel like you've heard a lot about is, well, okay, ASP.NET is great, and ASP.NET web forms, great stuff. You see lots of investment being made in there. We got MVC, we got Razor, we got all these things. But you're also starting to hear more and more about HTML and JavaScript, right? How do we do these things more client-side? Well, in SharePoint 2010, we were given from the SharePoint team an object model for working with SharePoint via JavaScript, right? We have one for .NET. That's what we used in the server-side code there. But we also have one for JavaScript. So let's take a look at how we can use Visual Studio 2012 to create that same kind of experience, but this time we'll just use straight HTML and JavaScript rather than ASP.NET and server controls and that code, and we'll take advantage of the JavaScript client library. So I'm going to go ahead and close that and close that. We'll keep the list definition up there. So let's right-click. Let's add a new item. And again, we're going to pick a visual web part. We'll call this one TaskAdder.js for JavaScript. And now, this time, rather than using server controls, let's just use straight HTML controls. Now, rather than watching me type all of that stuff again, we'll do the feature that everybody really wants to have, which is the ability to pop in exactly what you wanted right from the toolbox. So you see basically the same kind of UI. Only difference is this time we're doing it with just straight HTML controls. So basically the same kind of look and feel with a title, due date, and the ability to add a task. Okay, so we've got that. Now we need to go and actually write some JavaScript to go and use that JavaScript client object model to call back to SharePoint and update the task based on the UI, based on the values the user gave us. So to do that, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to just create a script tag. Oops, with the right number of end brackets. And again, just to save us some time, we'll pop in some JavaScript and walk through and take a look at what this is doing. So it's a little bit more verbose than what you saw on the .NET side, but it's really the equivalent thing. We're going out and getting the current context, we're getting the current web. We're going to get the list of lists and specify the list we're looking for. In my case, let's go change this to my tasks so that that works. Then we're going to go, you know, create a new item, just like we did before, and then we'll start setting properties of that item. So we'll set the title, we'll set the due date, and then let's also go in here and add a line to set the new item to set that status. And again, we'll say not started. Okay. And then because everything in JavaScript is asynchronous, we're going to go through and register a couple delegates here so that we either were success or failure, we have the appropriate responses. So if we have success, then we're just going to go ahead and refresh the UI. If we have a failure, then we'll just display that message as an alert to the user. All right, so let's run this and see how I did. You'll notice here we've got that Visual Studio Resolution service kicking in. It's noticed that there's already a list with that. We'll just go ahead and resolve that automatically. Go back to our site pages, my tasks. Let's go edit this page. What we'll do is let's delete this web part off of it. and insert our new JavaScript-based web part. So we'll add that. Let's go add our list in here as well. Okay, we'll save and get out of editing mode. Then we'll go in and say, you know, give the demo. And we'll specify that, and we'll add the task. And there we go. We see we've now added the task to the list just using HTML and JavaScript. All right, so same exact functionality, just using two different approaches for it. Now, one of the things that's also nice is that you saw some of it maybe in the keynote. Hopefully you've seen some other sessions. If not, I know there's some this week. Looking at a lot of the capabilities that we've added to both Internet Explorer and Visual Studio in terms of making it easier for web developers to do things and get working. So one of the things is the F12 tools in Internet Explorer. So here's a great set of tools that we can take advantage of as SharePoint developers as well. Where am I at? Here, right? So if I want to know, you know, where is something coming from or where is a style or whatever coming from, I can go click that, and in the F12 tools, it will take me to exactly where it is in the DOM, in that DOM tree that Internet Explorer sees, so I can figure out where things are coming from. I can go figure out for the styles what style is applying. So in the SharePoint world, this part alone is pretty valuable, right? I mean, pretty much everybody that's done SharePoint development has probably run into, okay, where is that style coming from? Why is it mine not working? Well, F12 gives you a great way to do that. F12 also shows you just how kind of insane the DOM that SharePoint creates actually is, but at least with a selector tool, you can get there and you can navigate through a little bit quicker. You can also use it for JavaScript debugging and those kind of things as well. Since JavaScript is much more late-bound, right, or loosely typed, it's nice to find and be able to use those tools. So just, you know, thinking about that, I think that's the important thing to kind of take away is that everything you see that's been done in Visual Studio 2012 for web development should apply to you as a SharePoint developer as well. That is one of the other design goals my team has when creating the SharePoint experiences. We want to make sure that because SharePoint development is really trying to be web-based development, that if you can do it in web development in Visual Studio, you can do it also when you're applying and working with the SharePoint environment, the SharePoint experience. Okay, so that's great, but what is it that when people are doing these HTML and JavaScript experiences, what else are they actually doing? Well, they're usually taking advantage of some JavaScript libraries that are out kind of in the community or in the ecosystem, right? Some of which have become really popular, like jQuery. So let's see how we can take advantage of those same kind of UI frameworks when working in the SharePoint experience as well. So you notice that in my little web part example, the due date was just a text box, right? It'd be nice to give them a little pop-up control, right? Maybe using something from the jQuery libraries, the jQuery UI framework, to actually give them a nice, rich experience for picking that due date. So let's go ahead and incorporate that into our project. So we'll go up here, and yes, my internet connection is still alive, so this should work. So let's go in. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to pop in just a couple includes for some jQuery UI components. You see I'm just including some jQuery script as well as a CSS reference from jQuery. Once I have that, what I need to do is I need to go in and I need to write a little code that actually goes and associates a date picker with one of our text controls. So we'll just go in here and we'll write a little function here. It's called document. Dot ready. And what we want to do in document already is actually go and make this mapping happen, right? So let's go in here and we're going to create a function. And inside of that function, we're just going to go and using the kind of jQuery selector syntax, we're going to go find our due date field, and we're just going to call date picker on that. And now we should be able to go and see that we've got our when I run this again, we should see that we'll pick up a date picker control. So let's go ahead and give that a run, assuming I didn't mess up my JavaScript. Let's go to our site pages, go to my tasks. And we go in here and we say, you know, demo. Boom, we hit that. Now we have this nice jQuery UI calendar control that we can use to pick the date. It's even better than the calendar control I'd used before. It's already defaulted to select today's date and so forth. So we say add a task. That'll get added to our task list over here, right? And again, nothing really unique to SharePoint about the way that it is. Just standard HTML, JavaScript approaches to actually going and creating these kinds of experiences. Next thing that we would do, style it, right? We want to make it look a little bit better. So again, just like we could do with anything else, we can go in and create a style tag and add our own custom styling components to this as well. So again, apparently I already did that. So here I've got just a simple style that's going to apply to the main div class, which is the name of the div that actually has all of our content in it. So if we run this one and say yes, go ahead and resolve that, we should see that our UI is going to look just a little bit better and be just a little bit more styled. Not much, but a little bit. So again, standard HTML JavaScript. That's the key here, right, is we're really trying to go and remove the SharePointiness from the experience as much as we can. Can't do it all yet, but you're just trying to make those experiences familiar to, you know, to web developers that are going to SharePoint and building these kinds of solutions. Okay, so we've got, you know, a pretty simple little project here, but we've seen some of those experiences that we're used to as web developers in Visual Studio are applying. We've seen how some of the advancements in Visual Studio 2012 for web development are applying to our SharePoint experiences as well. I mentioned that one of the things that we need to do is, as part of this, is actually go and work with how we're going to deploy and manage this solution when it goes out into our experience or being moved from server to server. We didn't have to think about those concepts when we just got started. Visual Studio does what we can to take care of, you know, packages and features and things like that for you. But we know that that is a key aspect of the experience for building your solution is actually defining how these components are going to be, you know, deployed and how they relate to each other and how what units of management you want for your solution. So you'll see that inside of Visual Studio, we have the feature and package designer. So we added those two nodes to your solution that actually go and support this. By default, Visual Studio will create a single package for your project if we can, and then we'll create the fewest number of features possible based on the rules and constraints of what you've tried to do. So we try to group things into as few of features as possible. So in this case, you see that we've got two features, one for our list definition and list instance, and one that contains both of our web parts, our server-based, ASP.NET server-based one, and our JavaScript one. If we wanted to change that, we could go into the feature level designer here, and we could say that, you know what, we like our JavaScript one so much, we're just going to use that one as part of this, and we're not even going to deploy the ASP.NET version of it. Now, maybe we could remove it entirely from our project, but that's the idea. You notice that there are some advanced kind of aspects to feature and package design, so you can have features that depend on each other and have activation rules. So we give you an experience here to add activation dependencies. So, you know, if this feature depended on another feature, we could go add that in here and have that apply to the experience. We see that we're also giving you the ability to view what's going on as far as the actual manifest files that we're creating. So you can see the manifest XML there. We did do some advanced kind of work inside of Visual Studio to allow you to add your own markup into the manifest. So if you had something in here where you said, you know, element manifest. So now that we've got it matched, you know, if, for example, there was, you know, some kind of attribute that made sense to put in here, you'll see that we will merge that in with the generated XML as well. We could do that as attributes. We can, you know, if there's new elements that are applied, you can do all those kinds of things as well. That's going to be completely invalid, so we'll take that out of there. And if you needed to, we have the take matters in your own hands option as well. So in this case, you can completely turn off the designer and edit the manifest directly in XML, and we'll give you XML schema support. So we'll give you a little bit of completion and validation of the structure of the XML, but it's kind of all yours. Visual Studio will stay out of your way in that case. So that's a little bit of that. Same thing applies. So we'll go re-enable the editor in this one. Same thing applies on the package level. We can obviously name it. We can bring in additional assemblies. So if you're using maybe if you are doing server-side ASP.NET-based development and you have some custom controls that you want available, you can bring those assemblies in through this, and you can actually add them to the safe controls list that SharePoint maintains so that we can actually run them on the servers. You can do all those things through the designer. And again, the same manifest editing capabilities are here as well. So if you have additional attributes or elements that we don't support in the design surface that need to get into your package manifest, you can do that through the design tools. You don't have to go completely to XML if you didn't want to. So now that we have that, we can go and actually package this up and deploy it. So what we'll do is, why don't we, actually before I do that, let me show you one other aspect of kind of the experience here. You may have noticed that when I was running, first we always got this resolution error around the list, right? It kept telling us that we already saw a list with that ID, and Visual Studio could remove it. You also would have noticed that if I had just gone to my site right now, sorry, I probably don't have it up, but if I had just gone to my site right now, we would actually see that the web parts and the list that I created, especially the web parts, aren't even there. And that's because to speed your iterative development cycle and make it a little bit more performant for you, Visual Studio, when you F5, will deploy the package and the features, and then when you stop debugging, in the background, we will start a retraction process that pulls those packages and features back out of your server, so that next time when you F5 again, they're gone and we don't have to do the resolution for you and save you a few seconds to minutes, depending on how big your solution is. That's just the way we do it by default. If you don't like that, you can actually go in and using the build events that we expose, you can add and remove your own, you can add and remove those commands for us, right? So it's actually not through the build events, it's actually through the SharePoint tab here. You'll see that we have these various configurations. We have two, the default configuration and the no activate. So if you're working on, you know, by default, we deploy and activate the features for you, so you're ready to run. If you're working maybe on some activation code and you would like to control that on your own, then, of course, you just use the no activate configuration and we won't run those tasks. If I go in here and view this, you'll see what makes up our default sort of set of deployment steps. You see what we're running. We're pretty much running everything as far as going in, doing a pre-deployment command, recycling IIS, and all that. We're basically going, and Visual Studio is making sure that we have the highest possible likelihood of being successful in deploying your features and not having conflicts. That's where you see these IIS resets or app pool resets and things like that. Again, as you get more experienced in the SharePoint development world, and you know that in some cases, hey, this change I made is maybe a direct assembly copy or just a direct file copy, I don't need to reset the app pool and those kind of things, well, you can start removing some of these tasks from the configuration you use, and that, again, also will speed up your development time. Makes sense? And you can add your own deployment tasks in here. You can add your own custom actions and those kind of things. There's actually a pretty, actually really solid ecosystem building up around SharePoint development and these tooling experiences. So some of the SharePoint MVPs have gone and created their own set of deployment steps and deployment step tasks that they can add into into this experience. So that's a little bit of how you can control your development environment, your development experience, and customize it to your own needs based on what you're trying to do and get the experiences you're looking for. Okay, so we'll just keep with the defaults in this one. And what we want to do is we're happy with our app here, so let's go ahead and publish it. One of the things that's new with Visual Studio 2012 is the ability to publish from Visual Studio directly to Office 365 or SharePoint Online. So in my case, I've got this demo site here. Let's make sure, yeah, this one. It's called schmelzerdemo.sharepoint.com. And I want to deploy my solution to that location. So come back over here to Visual Studio. You see that that's what's in here by default. Go ahead and click Publish. It's probably going to prompt me to log in, which it is. So we'll sign in. And now, just like we were doing locally when you're F5ing, of course it does. All right, well, that's fine. Deactivate that one. Delete it. Go back over here. Try that one more time. So now you see we pushed that package up, right? And now because you know, we don't really know what Office 365 environment or SharePoint Online environment you might be pushing to, we didn't go as far as we do on F5 to actually go and activate all of these things. We kind of leave that up to you to control how you'd like to do that. So we can go in here. We can choose this package. We can activate it. So it's going to activate our solution. All right, come on, activate. All right, so our solution is now activated. Now, of course, you would think that would be enough, but it's not. We're not done. So the feature is now activated. We'll go up to the site actions of our site, go to the site settings. We'll go to manage our site features. We'll scroll down until we find our TechEd demo feature 1. Activate that. And now you notice my tasks have shown up here, right? So immediately once we activated that, the list showed up, so we can see my tasks. We see it's empty. We can go to site pages. We'll create a new, you know, my task list page here. And just like we did before, we will go and insert a web part. Go to custom. We'll insert my JavaScript library, or not. Let's try that real quick. All right, there's the task. There's that. And then let's also add our list here. Lists and libraries. We should be able to see our my tasks list. There it is. Add that. Save and close. And now the answer is no, I understand. Add that. And now we've got our component up and deployed to our SharePoint Online or Office 365 environment right from Visual Studio. And you know, maybe this is a test environment or whatever, but we're off and running with that experience. All right? So what we've seen is trying to carry over familiar experiences for web development, take advantage of new capabilities that have been added to Visual Studio 2012 from the web development point of view. around HTML and JavaScript specifically, taking advantage of those new Internet Explorer tools. If I wasn't using Internet Explorer, and instead I wanted to use the DOM Explorer inside of Visual Studio, which is effectively the same thing, that works as well. So we could have gone, and when we were F5ing, we could have brought the DOM Explorer and used that to go navigate through, or whatever you know your favorite browser debugging tools are. So now we can go and take advantage of the Visual Studio experience around feature design and package design to create things exactly how we want, add and remove things, get into the lower levels of detail there. We've also seen how we can now deploy directly to Office 365 or SharePoint Online from the Visual Studio experience. Now, of course, what I'll focus on Thursday is that then extending this into the rest of the Visual Studio experience and the application lifecycle experience. So we can go check this into source control and do all those great things, you know, team builds, all that kind of stuff. So we'll do all of that on Thursday. I won't spend too much time on that right now. One of the things I did want to show was just a little bit of the work we've done between the Service Pack 1 of Visual 2010 and the release candidate of Visual Studio 2012 around pulling in some of the additional experiences. So with Visual Studio 2010 Service Pack 1, we added the ability to kind of more productively call or use the test runner tools in Visual Studio to create and execute integration tests. We happen to call them unit tests, but I know as SharePoint developers, they're really integration tests that we're actually doing, right, because you're using the full object model. We can also go work with things like the IntelliTrace tools, the more advanced debugging capabilities within the product. So I'm just going to show it to you here in this sort of experience, but you now will be able to, as part of the work that's been done in Visual Studio 2012 that allows you to deploy IntelliTrace after the fact, and it also supports, you know, for debugging purposes, doing it in a more production environment, you could get the same experience for a deployed application as you can just from F5ing. So in my case, I've got a slightly different app here that's just going and you know, pulling back some things from a list in a UI. And in one case, maybe, you know, I click on something and we see Visual Studio flashing at me over here because I have I forced a stupid little divide by zero error. Well, what I wanted to show you over here was, if you haven't seen it, the actual IntelliTrace window that's going on over here. This one's pretty simple. We see that we're stopped at the actual, you know, line of code here that was causing the problem. In more complex things, this allows us to sort of step back through time and see exactly what it was that got us to this position. So when you're just debugging, running F5, it's actually a nice tool. I know there are a number of times that I have always found myself trying to reproduce a bug that's buried deep somewhere, and I get a little bit impatient and step a little too quickly and step right into the exception and wish I could go backwards. Well, IntelliTrace allows me to back up on that case. But in the deployed environment, when you attach IntelliTrace to, you know, a server or a site or a solution that may be having some problems, you get this same log and the same experience without actually being there live as the developer. You can just get an IntelliTrace file sent to you, and then when you put it into debug mode, it's like you were there with your debugger attached in Visual Studio stepping through. You can see your locals. You can see all the variables. You can step backwards and see how you got there, all those kind of great capabilities. So for, you know, server environments like SharePoint, I think it's a really powerful tool to be able to go use that and leverage that. And that's something we've enabled you to do. We also, in Visual Studio 2012, have enabled the profiler, the Visual Studio profiler, to work in a SharePoint environment. So you can go and collect profiling data about your SharePoint solution, see maybe where your performance bottlenecks and so forth are. I will admit that one, there's an update pack that is coming out towards the end of the calendar year that we, I believe, announced a couple months ago, where we're actually doing additional collection profiling inside of the profiling tool. So what that specifically means is we will set up a bunch of filters, so we won't collect data from SharePoint itself. We'll collect data just on your app. So when you do hot path things, you can actually see where your code is taking longest and not maybe where SharePoint is taking longest itself. That, yes, that's maybe interesting, but there's not a lot you can do about it, right? That's our problem at Microsoft. We have to fix those code paths. So giving you the ability to do that, we'll do the same thing around the IntelliTrace and help you have some good settings for filtering out some exceptions that maybe SharePoint is throwing. Also, as part of that, we're going to introduce some capabilities to take advantage of the new fakes technology inside of the Visual Studio 2012 testing tools. So those of you that have, actually, how many folks have tried unit testing against SharePoint? And how many were successful doing it? Yeah, it's a lot of work, right? To do pure unit testing, because the SharePoint object model just is not conducive to that, right? You have to go and get a mocking or detour framework in there to go and take over. What Fakes does is allows us the ability to do that, and for the first update pack of Visual Studio 2012, we will ship a set of fakes for SharePoint. So you can actually now do, you know, pure unit testing against SharePoint, where you're not calling the actual server itself, and then of course still use the object model itself to go and take advantage of things like integration tests and so forth. So great set of stuff in Visual Studio 2012, and even more coming from the SharePoint developer's point of view, I believe. So that's a little bit of kind of the core experiences around Visual Studio. There is one other thing I wanted to show you as it relates to Visual Studio, just to have in your kind of mind. So I mentioned that one of the other products that I work on is, didn't want to do that. Let's go ahead and just close this. We're bringing another version of Visual Studio up. Bring another version of Visual Studio up. Okay. I mentioned that one of the other products that I work on is Visual Studio Light Switch. And I'm going to do a quickie demo here for you, but just to give you another view of an experience you can use or think about when creating applications and solutions for SharePoint or around SharePoint. So we'll go in. We were using C# before, so let's go ahead and use Visual Basic this time. Either one works in either case, but just balancing here. And so for those of you, how many folks are familiar with Light Switch? Wow. That's like a dagger. So I am doing a session on this tomorrow, so if you want to learn a lot more, I encourage you to come to that. But put it simply, Light Switch is a tool that we designed to be the easiest way to create a data-centric business application. We decided, you know, and we got a lot of feedback from folks that Visual Studio is great. It is a very powerful general-purpose development tool. Gives you great capabilities, lots of access to the frameworks, lots of access to the lower-level protocols, everything you want to be able to do, create any kind of application you want. But sometimes the needs of the application are just a lot simpler, and you just want to get it done quickly, but know that it's built in a way that if it takes off, if you need to do things, if it needs to, you know, grow and adapt and scale, it was built the same way you would have done it if you did it all yourself. So it would have built on a set of best practice frameworks and tools. And that's what Light Switch is all about, is creating that experience for you. So what I'm going to do is I'll just create, you know, the hello world of Light Switch. And in this case, Light Switch is all about, you know, these apps are all about data. So you may have seen back here, you know, we encourage you to start with data. There's two ways, either define data or use data, or both. I said let's use some existing data, and you see that one of the things that I can use with that is SharePoint. So when I go in here and say SharePoint, it's going to ask me for a SharePoint site. I've got one over here, that one, this one. That's just got a list of kind of some what look like repair incidents. It's the same list what we were using for that demo with IntelliTrace. So we'll just paste that in. And now Light Switch is going to go connect to that SharePoint instance using the credentials I have and pull back all the lists I can see. The one I'm interested in is this incidents list. And we'll call it incidents. Give it a little bit better name. That's okay. And now Light Switch is actually going to use the client object model to go figure out what that list looks like and bring it back and give me sort of an entity structure that I can work with. From within here, I can just take it as it is, or I can go annotate this information with some metadata that describes it a little bit more or describes the app usage. So, for example, Light Switch tries to figure out which of these fields may or may not be interesting to display. In this case, it says content type is interesting. I beg to differ. It's not usually interesting for a user to see a content type, so we'll turn that off. What else do we have here? You see that it also pulled in the user information list by default. It noticed the reference there. When I go into user information list, one of the things I might want to do is set the summary value. Again, LightSwitch goes through a very complicated algorithm for this defaults. It looked for the first string value, which happened to be content type. That may be right every once in a while. In our case, it's going to be wrong. So let's just switch it to name and use that. So I've got a little structure here. Oops, sorry. Next thing to do for these apps is I need to create UI. So let's create a screen. And this is part of that productivity we went. We saw that these kinds of apps that people want to go do, they have UI patterns that are implemented over and over and over again. So rather than starting with a blank design surface, draw out all the fields, we do it with this template or pattern-based approach. So what I might want to do is go build a search screen that lets me go view data. So all I need to do is specify what data do I want. We'll say incidents. We'll say OK. And now we'll run this. And we'll see that with just those simple gestures, what LightSwitch has created is a multi-tier application that has a service component where I can put rules and logic, and I can show you how we can do that here in a minute, that's going to talk to the back end. In this case, it's talking to SharePoint, so it's using the SharePoint OData feed to query and get the list data. It then exposes that as a service, also using OData, with my rules behind it, and then created a client application for me to access that service and launched it. So now I'm getting the list of data back from my list. Now, I don't have much in there, but you see the hint down here, trying to implement some best practices for you. So it's doing paging by default. We don't bring back everything. We'll bring back, you know, just a page of data at a time if you have more rows. And now we can see, you know, the data here. Now, if I had gone and, you know, set this up to have a drill in, we could actually drill into it, and we could start making changes to this data right within the application. We'd have a full CRUD application right now. And actually, we should have capabilities in here like search. So if I was to say, let's say damage. And filter, you see that it's gone and it's found everything with the word damage in it. Again, we have some default logic in here to go search across string values. You can turn on and off individual fields that you want. We can remove that. You see other common capabilities in here, like the ability to export to Excel. I believe I have Excel on this machine. No, I do not. If I had Excel, we would launch Excel and just copy the data into Excel and so forth. So that's a little bit of what this is about. Lots of additional things here that I will talk about and go through in the next few, tomorrow session. But, you know, everything like the ability to go and do sort of a little bit of user rights management, who can access the data, can everybody update it, can only certain people update it, all those kinds of things are now part of the same experience. And by default, we're just giving you, in this case, a Silverlight client application and this OData service kind of on the back end. So you could deploy this. If you wanted to deploy it right back into SharePoint, you could. You could deploy it back in using just the Silverlight web part host that SharePoint has to point to the Zap that is his client and flow it through that way if you wanted to. You also noticed that this morning in the keynote, Jason talked about the HTML client support we've added to LightSwitch, so that another way to just create a web part that way and flow these things through. So again, not something I'm trying to say should be the way you build all of your SharePoint solutions. We can't do a lot of SharePoint stuff with that. I just think as developers, it's an interesting thing to be aware of, right? Because there are those times where, you know, you have applications or parts of applications that you just want to go and build quickly like this and know that it's built on a good architecture of existing frameworks and tools that you're probably using already for your other work. Okay. So with that, let's switch back over here. So we saw this. We saw how our design point for SharePoint and Visual Studio was really all around creating a familiar experience, focusing on the things you were doing. You also saw that, I didn't show it to you, you saw the project type, but you know, we do acknowledge that there are multiple tools out there for building and working with SharePoint. And we try to take that into consideration for designing our Visual Studio experiences. First of which is making sure that if you started in one of those tools, we can bring you forward into Visual Studio, create artifacts that Visual Studio understands, you know, things that can be put into source control and so forth. So that's where that SharePoint Designer to Visual Studio thing is. We're also trying to make sure that we don't force you to jump between tools as a developer. I've heard that loud and clear that as a Visual Studio developer, I'd like to stay in Visual Studio, please. Don't make me jump between tools. You saw a first step of that around the list designer in Visual Studio, so you don't have to jump out of Visual Studio to have a visual designer for lists anymore. We will continue down that path with our SharePoint support. So that's a place where I encourage you, if you're doing SharePoint development with Visual Studio, interact with us. You know, there's forums like the User Voice and things like that where you can put in your suggestions, and we look at those. And of course, you can email me as well and do that. So again, lots of enhancements around specifically in Visual Studio 2012 for SharePoint, a lot of it around the JavaScript experiences and so forth, getting better debugging and IntelliSense support. We also did a lot of work around the service in Visual Studio that can pull and feed these things, so that if you are storing things in the content database, Visual Studio is more intelligent about what they are and can pull them out and feed them into your experience a little bit. So whether that's a JavaScript file that's sitting inside the content database and you want to pull to drive IntelliSense and completion lists, or you know, images, you know, other content that may be that you may be using. And of course, integrating with the more advanced capabilities of Visual Studio. We saw that. This is basically, I'll go that a little bit slower. So this is basically what I will do with you on Thursday, talking about a typical life cycle where you want to go from the development machine to checking into source control. You want some kind of nightly build to happen, or continuous build, or gated build, or rolling build. And then you would like those changes pushed to an environment, maybe a test environment, where you can now have that build deployed to that environment. People can test against it. They can log bugs. Those bugs can go back to the developer. The developer can check in and repeat that whole cycle. So we'll take a look on Thursday at how we can set that up with Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server, and you know, a little bit of PowerShell to make all of that work, and include some of the test capabilities. So we talked about that. Talked about LightSwitch. So with that, we've got a few minutes left, so leave it open for any questions. I'd please encourage you to submit evaluations of the session. Definitely helps us figure out, you know, where we need to tweak these kinds of things, so the comments are greatly appreciated. Questions? Thoughts? Yeah. Yeah, so the question was, why don't we have version numbers in SharePoint and in WSPs? I think the other question is, how do I deal with version numbers and those kind of things? So that's actually something, now that you brought it up, I'll include that on Thursday. I'll show you some techniques for doing that. It's one of the motivations behind getting a continuous integration and continuous delivery environment for SharePoint set up, is that even if you don't have the actual version numbers changing, you can at least use your source control system to do labeled versions effectively and know exactly what's where based on those deployments. But I'll show you some techniques for that on Thursday. Yes. Yep. Yes, that is a technique. It's just using it in the name. But we'll show a couple of those things on Thursday. Other questions? So the comment was that for Visual Studio 2010, we have a VM that's all set up with Visual Studio and SharePoint. Just bring it down and you're off and running. Are we going to do something like that for Visual Studio 2012? Would you like us to? I expect that when we get closer to the final release of Visual Studio 2012, you'll see something like that. Was there another question? Yeah. So the onet.xml file, I mean, you certainly can edit it. Whether or not what I don't know is how much we understand about it as far as deployment and updating it. So that's let's follow up on that one offline. I'll give you my email address and we can have a conversation about it. I don't know the answer to that one. Yep. Got a couple minutes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. It was around the onet.xml file. Like, does Visual Studio allow you to edit it and manage it? From the editing perspective, sure, it's an XML file. You can edit it. I think the more important thing is, do we understand what to do with it? And I don't know the answer to that, but we can follow up. Yes? So the question, a question around connection between my team and the CKS dev project that is predominantly done by a bunch of MVPs. We talk to them quite a bit. We love those guys and anybody that's doing that kind of stuff, but they're definitely one of the first groups to really push the envelope of, actually the reason we put a lot of extensibility into Visual Studio was because of that group. They engaged early on to go build templates and build tasks and all those kinds of things. So we work with them quite a bit from that perspective. And then if they run into problems, of course, we help. And we're willing to do that for anybody that's wants to make the Visual Studio and SharePoint developer experience better. We're happy to engage there. And then see how much stuff, you know, where appropriate, what we can be folding in, and of course we share, well, here's where it is on our roadmap and those kind of things. So I thought was there one in the back? No? Were there more up front? Any more questions? If not, I appreciate your time today. I know it's day one, so hopefully not too exhausted yet, but definitely enjoy the rest of the week. Thank you very much.